From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Our people don't any longer want to endure, to support all these kind of things in the past. Privatization, structural adjustment, orders from foreign countries, etc. So the U.S. must understand that a new age is going on in the region.
Ecuador's president, Rafael Correa, on the wave of change sweeping across Latin America. Today, a Democracy Now! Exclusive on Ecuador. Investigative journalist Greg Pallas interviews the Ecuadorian president about the country's lawsuit against Chevron and Ecuador's relations with the World Bank, the IMF, and the United States. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Washington Post reports U.S. Special Forces are expected to vastly expand their presence in Pakistan beginning in early 2008. The U.S. troops will reportedly take part in an effort to train and support Pakistani counterinsurgency forces and clandestine counterterrorism units. While the U.S. expands its presence in Pakistan, questions are being raised over how Pakistan has spent $5 billion in U.S. aid since the September 11th attacks. According to the New York Times, the money was supposed to have been spent to fight al-Qaeda and the Taliban. But now U.S. officials are admitting funds were diverted to help finance weapons systems designed to counter India, another U.S. ally. On Wednesday, Pakistan President General Pervez Musharraf met with Afghan leader Hamid Karzai. Karzai said more needs to be done to stop pro-Taliban militants from Pakistan crossing into Afghanistan.
There is reduced activity, sir, on the Afghan side, as unfortunately there is an increased activity now on the Pakistani side.
Musharraf has said Pakistan and Afghanistan need to improve intelligence sharing.
The key to fighting, to enhancing our capability against terrorists and extremists is intelligence cooperation. That is the key. The two intelligence agencies on both sides must cooperate more strongly if we are to deal with terrorists and extremists more effectively.
In other news from Afghanistan, two European diplomats accused of making contacts with the Taliban have been forced to leave Afghanistan. The Afghan government accused the pair of posing a threat to national security. Michael Sample is the acting head of the EU mission in Afghanistan. Mervyn Patterson is a high-ranking British UN employee. Meanwhile, in breaking news from Pakistan, several people have reportedly died today after an explosion at an election rally attended by former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. Bhutto is reported to be safe. On Wednesday, President Bush signed a $555 billion spending bill that includes $70 billion for military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Democratic-led Congress passed the spending bill without including a timeline for troop withdrawal from Iraq. Turkey has publicly praised the Bush administration for providing intelligence to help Turkey bomb Kurdish regions in northern Iraq. Turkish President Abdullah Gül said, quote, things are going on well at the moment. Intelligence is being shared. Turkey says the airstrikes have targeted rebels from the PKK, or the Kurdistan Workers' Party. Meanwhile, the Turkish Daily News reports Turkey will soon be using Israeli-made unmanned drones over northern Iraq. According to the paper, personnel from the state-run Israeli company Aerospace Industries will assist the Turkish army in using the Heron unmanned aerial vehicles. A new report from UNICEF has found an average of 25,000 Iraqi children per month were displaced within Iraq by violence or intimidation during 2007. An estimated 760,000 children were out of primary school in 2006, and 220,000 more displaced children had their educations interrupted in 2007. UNICEF also found 80% of children outside Baghdad don't have working sewers in their communities, limiting access to safe water. On Capitol Hill, Senate Democrats are attempting to block President Bush from giving a recess appointment to a government attorney who authored two of the Bush administration's secret torture memos. The Senate is usually in recess this week, but on Wednesday, the Senate held a 9-second session in order to prevent Bush from promoting Stephen Bradbury to become the chief of the Justice Department's Office of Legislative Counsel. Bradbury is currently the acting chief, but his nomination has not been approved by the Senate. In 2005, Bradbury signed two secret memos saying, approving the CIA's use of harsh interrogation techniques. In economic news, prices of existing single-family homes are dropping at near-record levels, suggesting the housing slump is far from over. According to one study, prices of homes dropped over 6% between October 2006 and 2007. The biggest declines were in Miami and Tampa, where prices fell over 11%. Economist Robert Shiller said this is the biggest drop in housing prices since 1941. The Washington Times reports foreclosures and prices drops are now the largest since the Great Depression. Meanwhile, investment bankers are celebrating on Wall Street. Four of the country's largest banks, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Lehman Brothers, and Bear Stearns, are expected to dole out an estimated $30 billion in bonuses this year. The CEO of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, is receiving a record $68 million bonus. Last month, housing advocates called on the nation's largest investment banks to donate their holiday bonuses to a foreclosure prevention fund that'll help prevent a new wave of foreclosures. None of the banks agreed to help set up the fund. A California family is seeking murder or manslaughter charges against the health insurance company Cigna following the death of 17-year-old Nadalene Sarkisian. On December 11th, doctors at UCLA determined that Nadalene needed liver transplant, but Cigna refused to pay for the transplant, saying the procedure was experimental and outside the scope of coverage. After 10 days of refusing to cover the transplant, Cigna bowed to public pressure and agreed to cover the cost of the surgery. But Nadalene's family said by then it was too late. The teenager died less than an hour after Cigna reversed its decision. The family's attorney, Mark Garagos, said he plans to ask the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office to consider manslaughter or murder charges against Cigna. Garagos said Cigna signed the girl's death warrant by delaying approval for a transplant. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has ruled employers can reduce or eliminate health benefits for retirees when they turn 65 and become eligible for Medicare. The ruling could affect more than 10 million retirees who rely on employer-sponsored health plans as a primary source of coverage or as a supplement to Medicare. The AARP criticized the ruling. AARP attorney Christopher Macaronis said, quote, "This rule gives employers free rein to use age as a basis for reducing or eliminating health care benefits for retirees 65 and older." And a group of deans from some of the most prominent journalism schools in the country are encouraging journalists to speak out against last week's FCC's ruling allowing cross-ownership of newspapers and broadcasting stations. In an opinion piece in the New York Times, the deans said the future of the profession of journalism and its public mission is at stake. The deans write, quote, "We do not believe that the market can be absolutely trusted to provide the local news gathering that the American system needs to function at its best." The deans warned that deregulation has led to cutbacks in newsrooms across the country. They write, quote, "Television and radio stations generally have smaller news staffs today than they did in the era before deregulation. That represents a real loss for American democracy," they said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, we spend the hour in Ecuador. In a few minutes, we'll play an exclusive interview with the Ecuadorian President, Rafael Correa, conducted by investigative journalist Greg Palas. But we begin today's show with this report filed by Greg Palas from the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador. Break. We're going to bring you that report in a minute, but we're going to go to a break first, and then we will go to the report on the peasants and indigenous Indians of Ecuador suing Chevron and then an extended interview with the Ecuadorian president. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Back in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to this piece by BBC investigative journalist Greg Pallast for Democracy Now!
We're flying past the snow-capped volcanoes of the Andes into the Amazon rainforest for the rumble in the jungle, the biggest environmental slugfest in world history.
This is the battleground, the rainforest of Ecuador, as large as England, where the Amazon's waters begin their 4,000-mile journey to the ocean.
To find Chevron's opponents, you need to take a little boat ride. Deep in the rainforest are the Cofan Indians. No one knows how many thousands of years they've been here, living off what they could hunt, fish, and craft from the river and jungle.
We use this to carry yuca, banana, corn, and little animals we hunt. In the old days, we hunted with blowpipes. Now I have a shotgun.
Their main meal used to be monkey, but today's menu is chicken. In 1972, a helicopter landed and everything changed. Chief Emerhildo Criollo says the oil company obtained permission to drill from the Cofan, speaking in Spanish, which the Indians didn't understand.
They give us candy, sugar, diesel fuel, and cheese. The cheese smelled funny. We threw it into the jungle. They say we could rub oil on our skin to cure aches and pains.
Oh, so they told you that if you put oil on your skin, it would
It would make you better?
Sí, eso dijo, sí.
Speaking in Kofan, Cecilia Kainama said she lost a daughter to the pollution. I asked her why she blamed the oil companies.
Many children have died of strange new diseases only since the drilling began.
I lost two sons. My three-year-old went swimming and began to vomit blood.
The Kofan say the damage to their health was caused by Chevron Texaco. Chevron says that's nonsense. Let's go find out. Ooh. This pit is the result of an accidental puncture to a wellhead. Now, Texaco said that when it was operating these wells, you didn't have many of these accidents. But that's maybe because of this. It says personal and confidential. It says reports are to be removed from the field division offices and destroyed. Like that. If you're here with me, you could smell it. Yum. The Kofan say this is standard operating procedure. They drink this stuff. They swim in it. And they breathe it. In Texas, they call this sky dumping. That's not Chevron smoke. It's Ecuador's own state oil company, Petroecuador. Chevron's long gone. I can't show you all the leaking pits. There are over 200 on the lands of the Indians and settlers. Like this one. Most people would be thrilled to find oil on their property, but not Manuel Salinas. All he's got out of it, he says, is an empty oil drum, pustules all over his arms, and a stomach ailment slowly eating him alive.
I suffer from these terrible, terrible rashes. It feels like my head is spinning apart.
And it's back over the Andes volcanoes, to the other side of the mountain, for the other side of the story. Now it's Chevron's turn. Satanic polluter or innocent victim? Let's ask him.
Scientifically, has nobody proved that crude causes cancer? Okay?
I asked Chevron's lawyers about the rising number of cancers among Indian children.
Did they show you a medical certificate?
No.
And it's the only case of cancer in the world? How many cases of children with cancer you have in the States, in Europe, in Quito? If there is somebody with cancer there, first they have to prove that it's caused by crude or by petroleum industry. And second, they have to prove that it is our crude, which is absolutely impossible. Hi-ya!
So the Indians are attempting to do the impossible. They've put on war paint and feathers, and heavily armed with lawyers, they are filing a new lawsuit. They are demanding no less than $12 billion from Chevron Texaco to clean up their forest. A bunch of natives in feathers in the jungle demanding $12 billion from an international oil company would be just a sad joke. But across the Andes, in Ecuador's capital, something happened which changed everything. An uprising of indigenous tribes and urban poor, when I was here 2 years ago, forced the president to flee out the back door of the presidential palace. In new elections, the left whips George Bush's allies with the campaign theme song, the 1980s Twisted Sister hit, We're Not Gonna Take It Anymore. The new government kicked out the last of the big U.S. oil companies, Occidental Petroleum. And just this month, Ecuador's new president, Rafael Correa, flew to Saudi Arabia to rejoin the OPEC cartel and told George Bush to shut down the U.S. military base in Ecuador unless Bush gave Ecuador a base in Florida.
Behind little Ecuador is big Venezuela, and its larger-than-life leader, Hugo Chavez.
Buenos días a toda Venezuela.
Chavez has given Ecuador $250 million and the political weapons to stand up to George Bush. But Chevron has a few friends in Washington. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice served on Chevron's corporate board for 10 years and is the only member of George Bush's cabinet who can carry 30 million gallons of crude oil. Chevron named a supertanker after her. Now, Chavez stands with Ecuador's leaders, and Ecuador's leaders are standing with those suing Chevron. We caught up with the man who designed the new alliance with Hugo Chavez, the powerful incoming president of the Constitutional Assembly, Alberto Acosta.
And he's architect of the plan to return Ecuador to OPEC and take down the U.S. oil companies like Chevron.
Assembly President Alberto Acosta. I asked him about Chevron's treatment of the Indians.
Chevron is responsible for the environmental and social destruction in the Amazon, and that's why they're on trial.
What if every small nation on the planet sued big oil companies, big U.S. oil companies, for damage created years ago? Wouldn't that bring the entire oil, worldwide oil industry to a stop?
What we should ask is not whether that will create chaos in the oil industry, but whether the oil industry is creating chaos in the world.
What about his new alliance with Hugo Chavez?
We don't have an imperialist relationship with Venezuela. We're brother countries building a whole new Latin America.
The conflict between Indians and Chevron is becoming a battlefield in the war between Bush and Chavez. Not everyone's happy about the new oil order. One dissenter asked us to meet him at the Hotel Quito. Si tu me miras.
Salud.
This drink is called the Spirit of Ecuador.
That's good.
Fabian Loza is relaxing after a long day as Ecuador's top television newscaster.
Do you think Acosta's demands on Chevron and the oil companies are demagoguery, are just...
No, I think it's more dangerous. I think Acosta hates the United States, hates Occidental. He loves socialists. He loves Chavez. He loves Cuba. He don't like a petroleum company. You know, Acosta is very, very left. And he is the new president of the Assembly.
He raises questions about the environmentalists suing Chevron.
Environment activists, people, are communists in the past. Now, they are overgreen, but red down, like a sandia. What's the meaning in English, straight?
Right, like green, like a watermelon.
Red. Yeah, watermelon.
Green on the outside, red on the inside.
As we left, the oil minister of the old regime waved goodbye, and I headed off to the jungle to meet one of these so-called watermelons. This is the COFAN's lawyer for their last filing, 27-year-old Julio Prieto. He describes the difference between his legal team and Chevron Texaco's.
Hugo Mas, in one yellow cab, two lawyers and one technician. Here they come, Texaco's convoy, with 10 big white trucks and I don't know, at least four of them are full of bodyguards, well-armed bodyguards, because they still thinking that we're dangerous around here.
I asked him why he's not suing Ecuador's own oil company.
Isn't it easy to blame the big rich gringos who left the country 15 years ago, and it's a mess right now?
I mean, Petroecuador has done bad. Now we are thinking about suing Petroecuador too, but that's not an excuse for Texaco to go away.
And that really burns up the lawyers for the American companies.
Yeah. So they're looking for deep pockets. Simply as that. That's just all what they want.
They're just going after rich gringos.
Exactly. Yeah.
There you go.
It's the largest fraud in the history.
Is Chevron Texaco just an easy target for lawyers backed by the new oil-charged politicians of South America?
Or is the new oil order a chance for long-delayed justice for long-ignored natives? And what happens to this jungle and the Cofan when Ecuador's own oil company begins new drilling? Chevron versus Rainforest Indians, or Bush versus Chavez, whatever you call it, is just another front in the war over that dark commodity that's left half the world in flames. For Democracy Now!, this is Greg Pallast.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back from our one-minute break, Greg Pallast's exclusive interview with the president of Ecuador. Stay with us.
Right now, another 10 million poems about revolution. Might not bring it back to life, but there's nothing left to do but try. A caged bird can sing even if she can't fly. So I write revolutions with my pen. Cause right now we might have bling the U.S. spins on Hollywood, pet food, cosmetics, and bombs. Would be enough to stop AIDS, call for reparations, and feed away starvation. Right now a girl sleeps afraid of the shadows below her door and the weight of the world thrust in her. Right now cold fingers cleanse paper cups and casualties display missing limbs at busy intersections, waiting for the light to turn red again. Right now West Africa's orphans are calling freedom, carving platinum into chains and shackles extracted from their mother's veins by their cousin's newfound slavery. Right now on the G-train in Indigena, a woman is force-feeding her newborn baby formula. Cause the nation's breast was drained by Texaco and there was nowhere left to go but underground railroads into sweatshops in this land of opportunity. Right now in West Philly, a born and raised stranger is pushing his pain between the legs of an angel and pissing his name on her face.
Revolution, Deaf Poets Collective, here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Rafael Correa was elected president of Ecuador just over a year ago. The leftist economist grew up in poverty. He won a surprise victory over banana multimillionaire Álvaro Noboa. Elected in the midst of a debt crisis, Correa's victory was seen as further proof of Latin America's leftward turn. He's now setting out to reverse the course of Ecuador's economic and political history. Over the past year, President Correa has called for renegotiating Ecuador's external debt, opposed a free trade pact with the United States, and set up a constitutional assembly. As finance minister in 2006, Correa helped end Ecuador's contract with U.S. oil giant Occidental. Since being elected president, he's also pledged to shut down the sole U.S. military base in South America. Rafael Correa taught at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. But he's also personally acquainted with poverty and what he calls, quote, the human drama of migration. When banana prices hit rock bottom in the 60s, Correa's family was badly hit. Desperate to get to the United States, his father served as a drug mule, but was arrested and spent 4 years in a U.S. prison. Today, we bring you an exclusive Greg Pallast interview with Ecuador's President Rafael Correa. He talks about the lawsuit against Chevron, ending his country's debt, his relationship with the United States and Venezuela, his dreams for Ecuador, and his own personal history. Greg Pallast did the interview in Ecuador.
But let me ask you. There is a massive multi-billion-dollar lawsuit against Chevron Texaco for supposedly destroying your rainforest. What if every little nation on the planet decided to sue oil companies for billions? Wouldn't that disrupt oil production worldwide?
Well, with these lawsuits, well, they don't go to interrupt the oil production in the third world. They go to push these big transnational companies in order to be a lot more careful when they want to extract our oil, because they did and they do in the third world things that they don't do in the first world. So it's a double standard that they have.
Well, according to Chevron, and I've spoken to them, they said that they operated very cleanly, just well, just as they do in the
okay,
U.S.
Yes.
I'll tell you what they're saying.
And also Cinderella cheats and a lot of things, you know.
And they blame your oil company. They say it's
that,
your
That is
fault.
Not true. Of course, our oil company has also done a lot of damage in the rainforest. But it is very clear that the problem comes from the Chevron-Texaco period, okay? Texaco period, because at the beginning it was just Texaco. So there are a lot of evidence about that.
Well, but here's the problem. First of all, can they get a fair trial here? They say that there's no chance that they can get a fair trial here.
Well, always there is a pretext, excuse, in order to avoid the responsibilities, you know. We think that they can have a fair trial here. And I can add, the evidence is there, of course. They are blaming our oil company, but before our oil company took over the exploitation, the damage was there.
If your courts rule against Chevron Texaco, how in the world are you going to collect? They have nothing here. How is little Ecuador going to collect against big Chevron?
Well, that will be a problem. It's not a public lawsuit. It's a lawsuit followed by indigenous communities from the Amazonia. Anyway, we go to support them in order to collect the money if they win the lawsuit. But, well, that will be a precedent because we can do the same thing with, if, for instance, Occidental, a lot of oil companies are following lawsuits against the Ecuadorian government. So we can follow the same strategy you want. How in the world they can collect the money?
Well,
it's a demonstration effect. Huh? So I think the own United States, the own international community should impose to Chevron Texaco the, if you want, the moral duty of paying this money.
Well, besides the moral duty, there are no Chevron assets in Ecuador anymore.
Well, of course.
But there are billions in Chevron assets in Venezuela. Will your friend Hugo Chavez help you collect if your citizens win?
You know, it's not a government problem. It's not our lawsuit. It's a private lawsuit. So, but I think there is a moral issue here. So it's not possible to have this kind of impunity if this indigenous community win the lawsuit against Chevron Texaco. So in this case, we think that the moral duty of the international community is to push to Chevron Texaco in order to pay this money.
Will you call on President Chavez or others to help you enforce, protect your citizens and your
I will call the whole international community. Always you are giving us moral speeches, advice about economic policy, social policy, environmental policy, moral policy, etc. So we are sure that in this case you're going to support these indigenous communities against a huge, a big, a very powerful transnational, Chevron Texaco.
Do you think that the U.S. government is going to support your attack, your government's attack, your people's attack on the oil company that Condoleezza Rice came from?
It's not an attack. It's justice. So we expect, yes, we hope that the U.S. government supports the this claim.
Now, you've thrown Occidental Petroleum out. You have forced Chevron Texaco out of your country. What is Ecuador's problem with U.S. oil companies?
What is the problem of the U.S. company with Ecuador? Because we are not crazy. Our indigenous people are fighting against Chevron Texaco for thousands, you know? You can see our rainforest. Before Petroecuador, it's not true that the fault is in Petroecuador. You know, before Petroecuador, we already had a lot of damage in our rainforest. And also, with Occidental, it's very clear that they break up their contracts and the Ecuadorian law. So it's not that...
You've been watching and listening to an interview with the Ecuadorian president, Rafael Correa, conducted by Greg Palast in Ecuador. We are breaking out of this interview because of breaking news from Pakistan. News now is that the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, has been killed in a suicide bomb attack. We're going to go now to a newsreel from Dawn News reporting in Pakistan.
Has just confirmed to us that Benazir Bhutto has expired. Benazir Bhutto has passed away due to critical injuries she received. We don't know the reason of these injuries which Benazir received, and we have no official confirmation on Benazir passing away, but most of the hospital sources and the cameraman who was at the hospital has confirmed most of the sources at the hospitals, at Rawalpindi General Hospital, are confirming that Benazir Bhutto has expired. Benazir Bhutto has expired a few hours after she had addressed her party workers at Liaquat Bagh in Rawalpindi. And minutes after her address, a blast took place, a huge explosion took place outside the main gate from where Benazir Bhutto was leaving.
Listening to and watching now was Benazir Bhutto speaking at a rally. Again, the latest news from Dawn News in Pakistan. Benazir Bhutto killed, they believe. Let's go back to the Dawn report.
From where Benazir Bhutto was leaving minutes after her address. And it's been a couple of hours since this blast has taken place. And Mubashir Zaidi, who is on the line with us, our senior correspondent, has confirmed that Benazir Bhutto has expired. We're trying to get in touch with our correspondents who are at the Rawalpindi General Hospital, where Benazir Bhutto was brought to half an hour after the blast, and she was brought in with injuries. And Interior Ministry earlier on confirmed that Benazir Bhutto was in critical condition, but now our correspondents have confirmed from the hospital sources, reports from the hospital sources, saying that Benazir Bhutto has expired. Benazir Bhutto has succumbed to the injuries. The injuries we don't know what of, but Benazir Bhutto has expired, according to the hospital sources. Many sources from the hospital of Rawalpindi General Hospital have said that Benazir Bhutto has expired. She was brought to Rawalpindi General Hospital for 30 to 40 minutes after her address. Minutes after her address, a huge blast took place from exactly the site where Benazir Bhutto was exiting the Liaquat Bagh, at the same main gate. Outside the main gate, the huge blast took place. Now, to get a further update on the situation, on this tragic incident, we have on the line with us Mubashir. Are you there? Could you give us an update on the situation at this moment on Benazir and the number of casualties? What do you have?
Well, again, there are unconfirmed reports that Benazir Bhutto has expired, although some of the doctors of Rawalpindi General Hospital are confirming that that has happened. But the situation here is that so far no official statement from the hospital has come, or the medical superintendent of the hospital has spoken on this issue, nor the PPP people are contactable at this moment to get a confirmation whether she has expired. But she was in very, very critical conditions, and she was operated in emergency, where we heard that there was a bullet wound on her body as well. Although there's no confirmation, there's a lot of uncertainty about this incident, that how she got injured, although we know there was a motorcyclist who blew himself up near his car when she was going back to her house towards the Islamabad. And the moment she came out of Liaquat Bagh, that attack happened, and she was immediately taken to Rawalpindi General Hospital, along with Sheri Rehman, the information secretary of the party, who's also injured. And we've got this news that Benazir Bhutto has expired. Doctors, no official statement so far has come, but all reports that are coming in are suggesting that she has expired because of her wounds.
And do you have any information on the condition, on the nature of Sheri Rehman's injuries?
Well, Sheri Rehman was brought to the hospital in a wheelchair. She thought to be in a serious condition, although it may not be as critical as which Ms. Benazir Bhutto was. But she is still being treated by the hospital doctors. And now the hospital is totally cordoned off by police and security forces. They're not allowing anyone to come near to the hospital, although thousands of PPP workers and other leaders are waiting desperately outside to get a word off on Benazir Bhutto.
And what have you heard, what sort of an update have you heard on the number of casualties, the number of injured and the number of dead?
You have just been watching a live feed from Dawn News. You've just been watching a live feed from Dawn News in Pakistan and listening for our radio listeners to the breaking news. It was in Rawalpindi that a campaign rally, a rally was being held by the opposition leader, the former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. And the news reports have it, though it's all very confused and the news is coming in quickly from different directions, that Benazir Bhutto has been assassinated in a suicide bomb blast. We were bringing you a live report from Dawn News, and we're going to continue to bring you that. She had come back to Pakistan on October 18th. She was challenging, along with another former prime minister, Nawaz Sharif, the current president and general of Pakistan, who declared martial law, General Musharraf. This is breaking news out of Pakistan. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We're going to try to go back to Pakistan right now in a minute. We're going to go to a break, though. This news is extremely significant. The latest news that we have been bringing you, our headline story before we learned of the Pakistani former prime minister being assassinated, Benazir Bhutto, we were reporting on U.S. Special Forces expecting to vastly expand their presence in Pakistan beginning in 2008. The U.S. troops reportedly taking part in an effort to train and support Pakistani counterinsurgency forces and clandestine counterterrorism units. We also brought you news that while the U.S. expands its presence in Pakistan, questions have been raised over how Pakistan spent $5 billion in U.S. aid since September 11th. The money supposed to have been sent to fight al-Qaeda and Taliban. Instead, U.S. officials admitting funds were diverted to help finance weapons systems to counter India, another U.S. ally. Let's see if we can go back right now to Pakistan to bring you the latest news reports that are coming out of Pakistan. We've been hooking up in a broadcast with Dawn News. Let's go to... We're going to bring you more from Pakistan in a minute, but first we're going to go to break for stations to identify themselves. Again, if you are just joining the broadcast today of Democracy Now!, we're bringing you live breaking news from Pakistan. The news reports are that the opposition leader, the former prime minister, Benazir Bhutto, has been assassinated. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We'll be back in a minute. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We are bringing you this breaking news from Pakistan, and that is the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, who returned in October to Pakistan to contest the rule of the President General Pervez Musharraf. Benazir Bhutto has been assassinated as she was speaking, assassinated in a suicide blast that has killed, well, untold numbers of others. We're going to turn right now to Zia Min. He is a physics professor at Princeton University in the program on science and global security. He also is a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. Professor Min is a Pakistani physicist, a Pakistani-American. Welcome to Democracy Now! I know you have just learned this news, Zia Min. Your reaction?
This is amazing, but not a complete surprise. We know that there was a big suicide bombing that was directed at trying to kill Benazir Bhutto on the very day that she arrived in Pakistan from her years in exile. And she had warned that there were going to be attempts on her life. General Musharraf had also said that militants might try and disrupt the election. So it's very tragic, but not a complete surprise.
Can you talk about the significance of Benazir Bhutto, of her whole family? Her father also was assassinated.
Well, Benazir Bhutto's father had been a charismatic politician who had served in as a civilian in a previous military dictatorship in Pakistan as the foreign minister of Pakistan. And he had set up his own political party, which Benazir inherited from him. And he had tried to rig elections after he had become prime minister in 1971 and triggered a major protest movement against himself. And he had actually been hung by the previous military dictator of Pakistan, General Ziaul Haq, for murdering his political opponents. And so the whole family has been fundamental to the politics of Pakistan for more than 30 years and has had a very tragic history.
We're talking to physics professor Zia Min, who is originally from Pakistan. He teaches at Princeton University and writes on politics and public affairs for Foreign Policy in Focus. Talk about why Benazir Bhutto returned to Pakistan. She was in exile for many years.
Well, Benazir Bhutto served as prime minister of Pakistan twice, once in the late 1980s and again in the mid-1990s. Both times, there were very serious allegations of corruption against her administration and people in her administration, and directed against, in particular, her husband and herself. And so when Nawaz Sharif had become prime minister of Pakistan, she had fled the country because of these corruption charges against her. And she had stayed in exile for many, many years to evade going to court to clear these allegations. But then, with the support of Washington and the Bush administration and from the British government, she had negotiated terms for her return to Pakistan with General Musharraf, in which General Musharraf passed a law specifically dropping the corruption charges against her. Not part of any general amnesty against other people, but just her. In exchange, she was supposed to come to Pakistan, participate in the elections, and support General Musharraf being president, and he would allow her to run for prime minister of Pakistan in the general elections. And so it was going to be a power-sharing agreement between Benazir and General Musharraf.
We're talking to Zia Min. He is here in the United States responding to the latest news that we've gotten out of Pakistan, the assassination of the former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto, who returned in October to challenge the current president, the General Pervez Musharraf, has just been killed in a suicide blast. The latest news we have, Zia Min, is that the other former prime minister who is challenging Musharraf, Nawaz Sharif, has just made it to the hospital where, according to news reports, according to Dawn News, Benazir Bhutto was brought to be operated on. But the new, latest news is that she has expired. His significance and his relationship with her?
Well, they were if there's a two-party political dynamic in Pakistan, it was between Benazir Bhutto's Pakistan People's Party and Nawaz Sharif's Muslim League. They alternated as prime ministers, taking power from each other in elections through the late 80s and early 90s. And so they are bitter political opponents, of course. But both of them were opposed to General Musharraf because General Musharraf was responsible for throwing both of them out of politics. Nawaz Sharif was also exiled by General Musharraf and has spent many years living in Saudi Arabia. And he also recently returned to participate in these elections until Pakistan's election commission, appointed by General Musharraf, denied him the right to stand as a candidate in these elections.
Zia Min, we're going to go right now to Pakistan. I'd like you to stay on the line. We're joined by Professor Sadaf Aziz from Lahore University. She teaches law and policy there. Welcome to Democracy Now! Can you talk about the latest you understand about the assassination of Benazir Bhutto? That's the news we're hearing here. Sadaf Aziz.
Hi, I'm sorry. I'm hearing your voice very faintly. But, I'm just receiving the latest sort of media coverage of it myself. I'm on campus right now, so I've just discovered that this happened as, you know, various friends and family was calling each other with, you know, a certain momentum. There's an incredible amount of shock over this. In spite of the fact that, you know, this attempt was made on her life on the day of her arrival here, I think that this was really just not anticipated. I think the idea was that what people understood was that Musharraf had basically accomplished what he wanted to accomplish with the last emergency. He had debilitated the judiciary, he had debilitated or eroded the power of the media, and now those things are being used to his own end. So the electoral aspect of it, although highly irregular in the sense of the elections as they were going ahead, were obviously skewed very much in favor of the PMLQ. But nonetheless, the momentum that was being built up, the popular support that Benazir obviously does command in Pakistan, was perceived to be a threat. However, I mean, because there seemed to be such an overwhelming sense that these elections would be rigged in the same manner that the previous 2002 elections were rigged by virtue of the local bodies intervening in a particular way in favor of the King's Party, the PMLQ, and the like. It just seems, you know, gratuitous and unnecessary, and just it's shocking, is all I can say at this stage. In terms of anything that I know about her, the actual assassination, you know, it's just what I'm hearing on the media right now. Mm.
Sadaf Aziz joining us from Lahore University. Zia Min on the phone with us from Princeton, New Jersey. Zia Min, can you add to that, to what Sadaf Aziz is telling us from Lahore University? Of course, the country, Pakistan, is in shock right now.
Well, the important thing to remember here is that when Benazir first arrived back from exile, and there was a suicide bombing directed against her, which killed many people, she had accused people close to General Musharraf's administration of, if not just being negligent, of being directly responsible in some way in that attack on her. But at the same time, one has to remember that during her election campaigning, Benazir has been making a very strong case that if she were elected, she would be much stronger, much more determined in taking on the Islamic militancy that's been spreading out of the tribal areas along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. And so there's good reason to believe that the Islamic militants, who have been responsible for a wave of suicide bombings across Pakistan in many major cities and have tried to kill General Musharraf and other political leaders, that they may have taken this upon themselves to take to launch another attack against Benazir Bhutto because they see her as a threat.
We are showing for our TV viewers live footage directly from Pakistan right now. The latest news, again, Benazir Bhutto has been assassinated. Unclear how many people were also killed in addition to the former prime minister at this point in this suicide blast. Sadaf Aziz, what do you see the reaction now, what this will lead to in Pakistan, where you are in Lahore?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I can imagine that there's going to be a taking to the streets. Certainly, you know, potentially in Karachi, as we saw, she commands a great deal of sort of street support there. In Pindi, you know, I'm already hearing sort of cautionary calls, they don't go out tonight, there's going to be a lot of violence, that sort of a thing. I think it's quite potentially, you know, it's possible. I can't imagine, of course, that the elections are going to go ahead. Whether or not this will, you know, be the basis, the pretext for another declaration or of emergency or the imposition of martial law is something that obviously, you know, we can sort of obviously have the answer to probably fairly soon, if not by tonight, certainly in the next day or so.
Sadaf Aziz, can you talk about this?
A great deal of sort of, you know, actual conflagration and the potential for a great deal of violence to happen on the streets now.
Let me ask Zia Mian, can you talk about the significance of where she was killed near Rawalpindi?
Well, I don't know exactly where in Rawalpindi she was killed. So it's hard. But the, you know, Rawalpindi itself is the site where the very first prime minister of Pakistan was also killed. And so in that sense, it has a very famous political history in Pakistan. It's also the place which is the headquarters of the Pakistan Army, general headquarters. And this has been traditionally the power base from which the Pakistan military has exercised its influence. It's only a few kilometers away from the capital, Islamabad. But I think the thing that we really need to focus on here in terms of the long term is that the People's Party, of which Benazir Bhutto was the leader, is now left leaderless at a key moment in Pakistan's politics and Pakistan's history. This is a party which was led, as I said before, by her father before her. And so without a Bhutto to lead this party, what happens to it? And it is important because this is the major national political party that has some kind of centrist, center-left commitment to the poverty and social justice issues. And, you know, what happens to this party now, not just in these elections, but in the coming years as it tries to rethink its relationship about what it is and who leads it and how it functions.
Zia Mian, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Physicist at Princeton University, Sadaf Aziz joining us from Lahore, teaching law and policy at Lahore University, responding to this breaking news, the news we have just gotten out of Pakistan, that the former prime minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, the opposition to the current general, Pervez Musharraf, the current president, has been assassinated. Benazir Bhutto is dead. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.